On Wednesday, it was the first of a two-day national biodiversity conference. It was organised by government departments. And two demonstrating groups that were there say an act of legislation tackling the biodiversity crisis must be enacted alongside the Climate Act, or Ireland will keep adding to its 30 years of inaction. I'm joined now by campaign officer with the Irish Wildlife Trust. That is Pádraig Fogarty. Good afternoon to you, Pádraig.
Hi, Ciara.
Thank you very much for taking the time. Ireland has been called embarrassingly bad after the 30 years of inaction on the biodiversity crisis. Tell us a little bit more about the conference that took place on Wednesday and Thursday and the demonstrations yourselves at the Irish Wildlife Trust did take part in alongside Extinction Rebellion.
Yeah, so this was a big conference. It was the second of its kind. There was another one in 2019 that was addressed by President Michael D. Higgins at the time, and he memorably said that if we were miners, we'd be up to our knees in dead canaries. Such is the level of warnings that we're getting from scientists and so on. So we were there with Extinction Rebellion this week because really we've done precious little about this crisis over the years, and here we are having another crisis. We're about to set off and publish a fourth National Biodiversity Action Plan when plans number 1, 2 and 3 really have been pretty useless. And so really what we were calling for was to put this plan on a statutory footing, because at the moment we have these plans and nobody's even obliged to read them, never mind, you know, actually do what it says in them. But if we had a law underpinning the biodiversity plan like we do for our climate plan, we'd have better mechanisms for monitoring and implementation and accountability.
I feel like over the past 2 years, 2.5 years, we've had to deal with a lot as a worldwide public when it comes to the pandemic, obviously. But now in this country in particular, we're, I know it's happening all across the world, but even if we compare certain things to our neighbours over in Britain or the continent, Ireland is suffering a lot more from this cost of living crisis. When you look at fuel, when you look at the energy providers, etc., putting up their costs. We're going to be speaking about that a little later with Dermot Jewell of the Consumers Association of Ireland. The reason I bring this up with you, Pádraig, is you're noting that it's been 30 years of inaction. Is now the right time to get the general public's attention on this? Have people, I've mentioned this word before over the past few days, become numb to problems and things that are happening around them? Because at some point, it's just so hard to compute and to take in everything that's happening around us, unfortunately.
It is, yeah, no, I'm absolutely with you there. It's, you know, I can see why people might switch off. But, you know, if you think the cost of living crisis or the war in Ukraine or even the pandemic were difficult issues for your life, well then, you know, the coming decades of ecosystem collapse and climate change are going to be utterly devastating. These things are going to be completely pale into insignificance compared to what we're facing on a planetary level.
Unfortunately, let me stop you there for one sec. How do we have these conversations with people who'd say, ah, lad, I can't be hearing this again. I've dealt with this, that and the other for the past, you know, 2.5 years. Then I've dealt with potential nuclear war. I've dealt with this, that and the other. I can't take another thing on board. How do you speak to those people about the risk the planet's under?
Well, unfortunately, we can't just turn away from it because people are fatigued with bad news. You know, what we're dealing with is something that's happening. It's real, and the facts are showing it. And just because we don't want to hear it doesn't mean that we should turn away from it or shut off. And unfortunately, if we do that, it's only going to get worse. And it'll continue getting worse, possibly forever, if we don't get our act together on it. So, I mean, you know, I appreciate that there are other problems going on. But as I say, this one is going to absolutely drown out every other problem we face more and more, because it's not just about saving butterflies and insects. It is about our way of life. It's about our health. It's about our well-being. It's about the future for our children. It's about our economy and our society. And it's for everything that matters at the end of the day.
Now, if we go into a little bit more detail here about species in this country, changing tack a little bit, but looking at figures from the National Biodiversity Centre, they note that approximately 31,000 species are known to occur in Ireland, but the conservation status of only about 10% has been assessed. Why is this?
Well, I mean, historically, we've invested very little in nature, whether that's protecting it or even doing research on it. And this is not unique to Ireland. I mean, we've all grown up fairly much thinking that nature isn't very important, that it doesn't matter very much. So why should we bother investing money in it? Of course, we know that is wrong. And I mean, ecologists have been pointing that out for many decades. So it's true. We know very little about biodiversity. We know very little about how it works. And I suppose people, you know, you can list off species that are about to go extinct, or you can give people percentages of the state of things. But ultimately, we depend on natural ecosystems for everything, for the air we breathe, the water we use, the food we produce, the climate that we live in, which has been so comfortable and stable for the last 10,000 years. And so what we're seeing at the moment is a complete unravelling of global ecosystems. Now, we've already destroyed our ecosystems in Ireland. And that means that we are, through our consumption patterns, we are importing ecosystem destruction from all over the world. And now we're facing global ecosystem collapse and possibly, scientists say, a sixth mass extinction event.
Explain a little bit more how we've destroyed our ecosystems here in this country.
Fair enough, it goes back a very long time. We've had farming in this country since, you know, maybe 5,000 years ago. And yeah, since farmers started arriving, the first thing they did was clear the forests. And it's exactly what's happening in Brazil today, where you see the Amazon being destroyed to make way for livestock farms. We just did it longer ago. Mm-hmm. And we've destroyed our bogs as well. We've drained them, we've burned them, we've put monoculture plantations of forestry on them. Out at sea, we have trawled pretty much all the sea life from the seafloor. So the sea is practically empty compared to what it was, you know, even 30, 40 years ago. And so really through our actions and largely through our food production system, the way we produce food is the biggest source of greenhouse gases in Ireland. Globally, it is the greatest driver of extinction and ecosystem destruction. And in many countries, including in Ireland, it's the greatest source of water pollution. And you know that in County Kildare, pretty much all of the water bodies in County Kildare are polluted. And some of that is from municipal waste, but most of it is from agriculture.
Pork, you may have heard about the number of fish species that were found dead in the River Rye over the past few days. And people believe that's due to, obviously, polluted water. We're very much aware of what's happening, I guess, in that sense here in the county. If we look at 2019, the National Parks and Wildlife Service released Ireland's sixth national report to the UN Convention on Biological Diversity. And the findings show that 91% of protected habitats are in poor or inadequate condition, and more than 50% are declining. 14% of species assessed are considered to be endangered, and that's just 14% of the 10% that we know of out of those 31,000, if that makes sense to people. And 120 native plants and animal species to the country, both on land and in the sea, in the country Ireland, obviously, have gone extinct, and the list of those deemed critically endangered is rapidly growing, Pork.
Oh yeah, it's an absolutely dire situation, and we were pointing out this week that it's 30 years since world leaders went to Rio de Janeiro in Brazil, and they attended what was called the Earth Summit, and it was a huge jamboree at the time. It got enormous media attention, and it was a great moment of hope because it was the first time that world leaders got together and acknowledged that we have serious environmental problems, and things have just got so much worse in those last three decades that it's quite incredible. How many reports have been published, how many laws we've passed, how many promises we've made, and really practically nothing has been done about it. And really that's really why we were outside protesting this week, because we have to stop just churning out reports. We have to really get on and do things, and critical among those is changing how we produce food, but also, you know, pumping sewage into our waterways, draining our bogs, all those other kinds of things that we really need to be getting on with.
Okay, Pádraic, I appreciate your time this afternoon discussing the demonstration a little bit that was held at Dublin Castle on Wednesday. Wednesday was the first of a two-day national biodiversity conference organised by the government. And the demonstration groups, which was the Irish Wildlife Trust and Extinction Rebellion, do say an act of legislation tackling the crisis must be enacted alongside the Climate Act, or this country will keep adding to its 30 years of inaction. More information can be found from the Irish Wildlife Trust website, and Pádraic Fogarty is the campaign officer for that group.
The number of people using cheques as a payment method has hit an all-time low, while mobile banking continues to soar. This is according to latest figures from the Banking and Payments Federation of Ireland. And we're going to discuss, is this the end of cash, with Dermot Jewell, of course. Dermot, how are you today?
I'm well, Ciara. Thank you.
Is it the end of cash?
It's not. Potentially, in a number of years, we will see a significant reduction in it. But to all intents and purposes, it's not a feature of government planning at this stage. It's too early. And it's acknowledged that there are very, very many reasons why we still need to have certainly some cash moving around the system. A lot has happened, obviously, because of the pandemic, where the contactless payments became very much not just the norm, but the required means of payment. And that's had an impact, there's no question.
So why is it so important to keep cash circulating throughout the economy?
Well, there are a number of people who don't hold a bank account. Certainly younger people would not. But to give an example, a lot of people have saved over a great period of time and they saved cash. Others are paid in cash. You'll have a number of younger people who are given an allowance in cash because they're not allowed to hold a bank account. They can't. You can't ask your grandchildren if they have an IBAN number because they can't hold a bank account until they're at least 16. As I say, savings, family events are always watched and helped along, if you like, by elements that are saved for and prepared for in cash. And it's a way that people can manage their finances as well. And in addition to that, visitors and tourists, they come with cash because they're a little bit afraid in terms of security to overuse a card when abroad.
So you spoke about why, you know, cash will always play a part, I guess, in Irish society. But why is or what's the impact or the downfall of seeing these contactless payments rising by 53%? That's just compared to 2021.
Yeah, exactly. The downside is that this has been, I mean, okay, I can appreciate the increase in the number of transactions because the ability to tap to buy a coffee, a sandwich, a newspaper, anything you like is easy and it's simple for those who use that system and are happy with it and comfortable with it. But the bottom line of it is they're just a great group who are not. They don't have it. They don't want it. And it's a choice. And the somewhat frustrating element of this is that it's not to say one day we won't go towards that route, but others have tried in Sweden, for example, and it didn't work. It took a while and they realised this just will not work. You've got to have cash somewhere in the system. But this, to all intents and purposes, now has moved into what is a business decision. The choice is by business to say we want to transact in card by card only. Now, they can do that. There's nothing against it. But it's having the potential to exclude a number of people, the very people that I've just mentioned there, from being able to use that cash to enjoy whatever the service or the product is that they're selling, and to be told, look, your money's not good here. And I don't mean that to be negative, but to be told that causes a problem and a great degree of frustration for quite a number of people.
I actually went somewhere the other day, and for the first time ever, I was refused to pay in cash. Now, I very rarely have cash. I would have, you know, grown up very young, having the old debit card and once you could get the bank account and all the rest.
Yeah.
And I was so surprised when I did hand over the cash that they were like, sorry, we don't actually take cash. Another thing that's not really being seen very frequently is cheques. And approximately 4.5 million, it will sound like a lot, cheque payments were made in the first quarter of this year. But this is a new quarterly low for cheque volumes. And it appears high in the age of digital banking, though, Dermot.
Yeah, you're entirely right. checks, the focus on checks happened many, many years ago, and it was well flagged and it was well engaged with, look, we need to do this, we're going to reduce it and try to phase it out over a period of time. And for businesses, predominantly, that has been the case because it's an easier way of credit control. Again, as I say, the business focus, and it's a cheaper and faster way to get away from checks to ensure you get a payment, because that was what a lot of businesses were suffering with, where they said they were asked for a payment in check, they were told a check was sent. It could take days for it to arrive. When it did, it could take a number of days again for it to clear the bank. So it does not suit business, and never did. And that's why the IBAN and the direct debit system works very well. And it works well for us all. I'm not entirely against any side of business like that. But I am, and the association and quite a number of other groups that I'm aware of, it's the idea and the suggestion that because there's a boost in the use of contactless payment, that it's the only way to go. It may be in time the only way to go in certain areas, and I'll give an example of that in a moment, but it's not exactly the way to go for everybody. There has to be an element of choice, and it needs to be phased in and flagged well. And the example I was going to give is that it's been long, long on the call list. Can you please organise a system where people can get on a bus and not have to find the exact cash or whatever system? And that hopefully is going to be in by 2023 or 2024. But it gives you an idea of the long run into it and the engagement with it and the system that operates there. So again, as I say, if we're going to do this, let's do it properly and approach it and have some consideration for those who, to all intents and purposes, will be excluded, not all day long, but on certain occasions that can be embarrassing and frustrating from them when they don't have any other means immediately to hand of paying.
Again, the other day I tried to get on a Dublin bus for the first time since the pandemic, and unfortunately I didn't have any cash, so I had to take a much more expensive taxi. And as you know, in this current cost of living crisis, I think we're all trying to look at the pennies and where our euros are going.
Absolutely, you're entirely right. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, that, you know, the areas you expect and would think would move along don't. No pun intended about moving along. But however, but it's, you know, it's a frustrating element. There are, we've got ahead of ourselves in one way, and we're still far behind the practices of others. And when we get it right, it will be ideal. But as I say, the point was made by the National Transport Authority. They, for example, would like to go cashless by 2027, but they make the point very, fairly clearly that is a government decision. It's not for anybody to determine except government, because they have to engage with the public.
So I just mentioned the cost of living crisis. I couldn't have the chief executive of the Consumers Association of Ireland on without speaking about it. Dermot, I know you were writing in the Irish Examiner a little under 2 weeks ago about consumers needing more clarity about why so many prices are rising. And your first line in that article was, for over 20 years, the Consumers Association has been tracking the price of an average basket of supermarket goods. And the March survey reflected an increase of just over 4% in prices since 2019. What would you say to our listeners here, Dermot, who I guess are coming to the end of their tethers in a lot of way, just every day hearing about another increase? Yesterday I had Dara Cassidy, communications with bonkers.ie, on about Air increasing their prices for half a million people from August. It's just every day a new story.
Well, I have to say, in relation to that basket of goods, the added frustration of that was is that we carried out that survey in March. The increase was 4.5%, almost 5%. Within 2 weeks, bread alone had increased by an additional 7%. So I know what's going on out there, and it is absolutely shocking. And to all intents and purposes, we seem to be being conditioned all day long that every price for every item is going to go up. And with that in mind, that was why in the article I was saying we have got to have transparency behind any price increase. In other words, it needs to be explained in plain English, simple terms. The price today is X and tomorrow is going to be Y because, but not because times are tough and everybody else is doing it. And a lot of trust is being lost in the midst of frustration of trying to manage a mortgage or trying to manage a household bill. in the sense that, well, why? I know prices, I'm told, have to go up, but why are they all going up and all at this level? And at the same time, I know government are trying to do something, and I know they have done some areas of element and good work. But the key focus is going to be on the price. A lot of people now, I appreciate, will say, oh, dear God, I can't wait till October. But we're going to have to wait till October to find out what kind of a very real plan is put in place, because this cannot continue the entire
time. But Dermot, this whole thing about October, obviously Budget Day is always in October, as people will know. It's a lot of pressure on October, because I feel like once October comes, we're not all going to be satisfied with what we're potentially, and that's only potentially, given.
No, I couldn't agree with you more, because the time that the €200 or the inclusive of VAT was passed across, we and others again made the same point that, look, I know it's been paid, but already by the time it was paid, another one is needed. And we've been told, well, we have to wait till October for that. The situation in relation to reduction in fuel, the point was made, look, can we not do something more about that? We'll talk about it in October. And more importantly, when it came to the whole cost of electricity and gas, could we not have a nil rate of VAT for a period of time? Again, we'll have to talk about that by October. And it's, as I say, I share the frustration, because we're all in this horrible boat together. Although I must say, we're not all suffering the way certain low-paid people or those on benches would be. But it's something's got to give, and it's got to be done quite quickly. And there doesn't seem to be an awful lot on the horizon to make us cheer up in the revelation that that's going to happen.
No, and majority of people haven't seen an increase in their wages. You know, you're mentioning the basic things like pensions, etc. Obviously, they're not going to see an increase. And if they were, they would have to wait till October. But for a lot of people, when it comes to their wages, they feel like they're doing so much work. Everything has gotten more expensive, but there's no increase there. And even you have mentioned at the Consumer Association that in terms of food, again, even the discounted offers, they're significantly less these days.
They are. They've almost been eliminated entirely, because there's no room there because of the cost of goods coming in. They've been taken out. And that is the biggest problem. The only means through which, interestingly, that you mentioned that clearly, because the only point of solace that we could come up with was that it didn't matter with whom you bought your shopping. If you bought own brand, you could save as much as 50%, but you had to do it across the board. And believe it or not, even since that, the own brand products have increased by a fairly significant amount. There's no stopping to this, and which is why we can think about it and wish about it. We need a wish to come through, and the only people that can make it happen are government, and it's far too quiet at government level. Maybe they're struggling with it, and I'm not surprised. I would. But we've got to find some means of helping people out through this. But other than that, we're going to have a very significant number of bad debts for formulation through the entire system for consumers. And when it comes to business, they're going to see a massive downturn in sales, because nobody's going to be able to afford to buy anything from.
Dermot, I know this is too complex a question to expect a brief and short answer, but if as much as you possibly can, what tips and advice would you have currently for consumers out there who, again, really cannot make ends meet and are reaching the end of their tethers?
They've probably done this already, but obviously they're going to have to look long and hard fix out a budget, know what you must pay. One thing I have to say before going further, if you find even in your mind that you're going to struggle to pay something like a mortgage or any bill to which your credit rating is attached, immediately get in touch with the people to whom you owe the money and tell them that you're struggling and you want a bit of help or a bit of a stretch in the payments. It's really important. And on the other side of it, all you can do is try to do, and I hate saying to people to shop around, but take the time, even go online and see who's offering the best deal for whatever it is you're trying to buy, and go and do that. Walking around the supermarket, a lot of people are expert at it, and they know what they're doing, they know what they can buy. But when it comes to the other, there are other wish items on a wish list that they're going to have to try and figure out how to do. I mean, the months I know schools are only closing, but it won't be long before they reopen, and all of the pain that's going to come with that. So try to figure some way and engage with the schools and see if there's something that they can do to work on the whole situation in relation to books, uniforms. If they're to be postponed for a number of months or a year, do it. We need practical help here to people who are struggling at the top end of, there's no let up in the cost of everything today. So it's just those kind of elements. And again, as I say, I know already people have cut down on transportation. They've cut down on using the car as much as they can. That said, I know an awful lot of people, it's very fine in the city where we've got good transportation, but if you're in a rural area and you have to travel in a car, there's no help. This is where we come back to government again. So those will probably frustrate a lot of people because it's very limited in what you can do, but we need everybody involved in this, particularly those who are owed money, to think a little bit outside the box to help people get over this.
We appreciate your time this afternoon. That is the Chief Executive and also the Policy and Council Advisor with the Consumers Association of Ireland. Thank you, Dermot Jewell.
Thank you.
Now, we have been advised or notified that volunteers are needed at NCBI store in Clane. And we have the Head of Advocacy and Communications with the organisation, June Tinsley, on the line. Hi, June.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for joining us. So, very important because NCBI is currently recruiting volunteers to play a vital role in the retail stores across the country. But in particular, there is a need to fill the retail assistant and other roles in the furniture store. That's on Main Street in Clane.
Yes, thanks very much. NCBI has close to 10 stores right across the county of Kildare. And today we're putting a kind of a spotlight on the need for our two shops in Clane. One is a dedicated furniture shop and the other is a retail clothing shop. So the kind of roles that we would be seeking individuals to do would be kind of furniture assistant, retail assistant, supervising the stock that comes in, undertaking kind of price checks, those kind of things, operating the till, customer service, also involved in kind of window displays, any of those kind of activities that you would envisage in a retail store. So there's different types of roles, and that the information is available on our website, ncbi.ie. But we're particularly putting a shout out to our two shops in Clane if anybody is interested in volunteering. It requires maybe about minimum of 4 hours a week.
June, just remind people what NCBI does do as an organisation.
Sure. We're the National Council for the Blind of Ireland. So all the money that's raised in our stores go directly to funding our frontline services to help individuals who have an acquired sight loss condition or have been born with a vision impairment or blindness to live independently and to live confidently. And we offer everything from kind of practical and emotional support to assistance within school or employment or training. An extensive amount of technology training is on offer. We also have our library service. I suppose essentially every aspect of an individual's life, NCBI can help them fully participate in, whether it's sport and leisure down to technology and everything in between.
Okay, well, obviously a very worthy organisation and charity, and NCBI, as June says, has over 10 stores across this county, but in particular this retail assistant and other roles in the furniture store on Main Street in Clane. So as it's noted here, you can have a direct and positive impact on the lives of people who are blind or vision impaired across this county and the whole of Ireland by volunteering with the National Council for the Blind of Ireland. So you can visit the store in Clane or you can contact Shop Volunteer at ncbi.ie or visit ncbi.ie/supporting-us/volunteer to register your interest, because maybe you're listening to us and you're not from within this county and a little further afield. So do make sure that you take those details down and get onto the website. But if you missed anything, 045-898-999. That is the phone number here. Cannonball is the most unique supercar fraternity in the world. And if you did not know, it all began here in Ireland. I am joined this afternoon by the founder of the Cannonball Run. That is Alan Bannon. Good afternoon to you, Alan.
Good afternoon to you.
An exciting few days coming up for you. It'll be very exciting for people here in County Kildare because the Cannonball Run will be going through Naas at approximately 6:30. But before we get to that, what exactly is this?
Cannonball is an organised road trip I set up in 2009 as a fundraising idea. And we've raised just under £1.3 million for various children's charities in the last 13 years. So it's important to mention that. It's not a race. There's no comparative element. It's a big organised road trip that takes place throughout the year. So this one is our classic car event. Our big one is in September with supercars. And we do other events like Scotland and Europe as well. So we're really excited to bring Retro Cannonball to Naas on Friday evening.
And how did you get involved?
I suppose I would have watched a movie years ago. I'm somebody who loves cars. And my mum and my sister were working in Bardstown at the time. And I got introduced to that as a charity. And I said I'd organise a unique fundraising event. And that was what triggered it for me. And then every year since then, it's just grown bigger and bigger. You know, we're based in Naas, so it's great to bring Retro to Naas town. But it was an idea I had to raise money, and as I said, like just under £1.3 million, 13 years later, it's something we're very proud of.
It's incredible. It absolutely is. And we know at the moment, obviously over the past 2 years, in terms of COVID-19, many charities, really all charities, suffered. To register, though, I'm assuming, Alan, everybody will have already had to do so if they want to take part.
Yes, to register for one of our events, it all takes place on our website, which is cannonball.ie. We have our big event in September. That's all Porsches, Ferraris, McLarens, all the supercars. We have a lovely 4x4 event taking place in November. But all the information will be on our website, cannonball.ie, and our social media pages as well, our Instagram and Facebook.
I'm on it at the moment, cannonball.ie, and some of the cars that were at last year's Cannonball Run are absolutely amazing. Just let our listeners know some of the cars that they will be seeing.
For this weekend, for Friday, we have some lovely Lamborghinis, Ferraris, gorgeous E-Type Jaguars, some really beautiful classic cars. We have cars actually in this event from the late 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s. So a lot of Porsches, old Cosworths, a mixed bag. We have 80 cars taking part in the event, and we've got a few surprises in store for people tomorrow evening as well. We've teamed up with Leon Nolte there from Mondello, and he's rounded up a few very special cars to warm up the group. So they'll all pass through at exactly 6:20. And then the Cannonball cars will roll in at 6:30. It's all taking place in Poplar Square, just outside Lawler's Hotel there, the start-finish line, the screens, and you'll be broadcasting live there yourself.
And Alan, tell me, where is it all kicking off?
So it'll finish, the actual finish line on Friday evening is in Poplar Square. I think everybody should be down there for...
No, but where is the actual event kicking off from?
Oh, sorry, it starts in Belfast.
Today, right?
Correct. This morning we left Belfast and we're going to be in Naas this evening at 6:30. And then we leave Naas tomorrow morning, which is also a great opportunity to see all the cars in Heatherman's car park for 10:30. And we leave tomorrow morning, then go to Johnny Fox's for lunch and we do the Wicklow Mountains and we finish in Wexford tomorrow evening.
Okay, it's all very exciting. Thank you so much for taking the time. Obviously, founder of the Cannonball Run, that is Alan Bannon. And everybody can look forward to seeing those vehicles going through the town of Naas this evening, Alan, is it, at 6:30?
Correct. And if I could just make one small announcement, the guards have been amazing. The council have been amazing. Kildare, they've worked with us. They're going to assist us. But it'll be advisable to take Junction 9A. For anybody coming into Naas around that time, it'll just ease the traffic on the Dublin road. So if you are coming home, just take Junction 9A around those times between 6 and 7.
Okay, perfect. Alan, thank you so much.
You're very good. Thank you.
So Retro Cannonball is coming to Naas this evening. The finish line is at Poplar Square today at 6:30. It will feature 100 classic cars. There's going to be free family, live entertainment and obviously a great festival atmosphere around the place. So the spectators, if you do choose to go out and see it, which I do advise you to do, you'll see some rare classic cars and meet some of the drivers and enjoy some of the fun this Friday evening. And of course, John Dunn will be there with KFM's OB unit and lots of stuff will be happening. So from 6 o'clock, KFM will be broadcasting live from there.